A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown? Sleep Tight Stories.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. My name is Scott.
And my name is Ben.
I sounded like I was asking a question, didn't I?
You know what? There's nothing wrong with checking.
Yeah.
There are no stupid questions.
Sometimes you wonder. That would be kind of a stupid question, though, if I asked my own name. Anyways, Ben.
Anyways, Scott.
I got a hint here that you may want to talk about something that's military-related.
Yes, I do. We talked about this before.
Yeah, I know. We get actually some requests for people that want to talk about military hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about tanks in the past.
Yep.
Have we talked about jets? I think we have talked about jets.
We've touched on jets because we've talked about the idea of people strapping jet engines to cars.
Which is, by the way, the greatest idea ever.
Sure.
Yeah. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, and motorcycles, things like that.
Right.
The smaller, the better. You know,
yeah.
Go-kart, whatever. It happens.
Yeah. Or the thing where they put the rocket on the rails, literally.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
that?
Yeah, that's right. It's another good one. All right. So anyways, this is another military topic for us. And you've got just a load of information on this. I've got very little on this, but I'm gonna quiz you about it because I'm really interested in these. I think they're kind of cool. I just have never really taken the time to learn a whole lot about them, but you have.
Well, Scott, that's very flattering.
I
appreciate it, buddy. Don't get everybody's hopes up because we don't know.
This is going to be the greatest podcast ever, everybody.
Ever.
Okay.
So what? What we're talking about today are called unmanned aerial vehicles.
UAVs.
UAVs. And UAVs have...
AKA drones.
AKA drones.
Yeah, we hear that a lot now in the news, right? Drones.
Right.
They always say drones. I never hear UAVs.
Right. You hear about drones in... you'll hear about drones working typically in military areas or theaters of war like... Mm-hmm. They'll be in Afghanistan, they'll be in Pakistan, and you'll hear them doing reconnaissance missions. You'll
yes.
hear about, and some of these vehicles are armed as well. But here's a funny thing that I think most people don't know about drones, and we should start with this. The first unmanned aerial vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
1930s.
1930s, really?
The British Royal Navy. Well, okay, I won't – maybe it's a little bit extreme to say it's absolutely the first one, but it's the first one that the military used.
Okay.
That we know about. You know, maybe there's a secret one. But it was called the Queen Bee, and so it could go like about 100 miles an hour and 160 kilometers – for our really? Non-U.S. listeners.
Oh, very good. No kidding. Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected this.
And the
not,
big,
not at that time.
The big thing was, what really separates it from a rocket is that it can land and you can use it again.
Hmm.
And This is the funny part, though, because we have this in our article on How Stuff Works. Instead of being used offensively, it was mainly target practice for British pilots.
No kidding.
Which is how it was supposed to be used.
That's funny.
They would take it up, fly around, and learn to be an ace by shooting these.
World War One flying ace. Mm-hmm.
And World War II brought some other things out, actually, on the German side. And it was more like a bomb,
mm-hmm.
more like a robotic kamikaze.
Okay.
Maybe robot's not the fairest word, but this thing could go 804 kilometers an hour. It's 500 miles an hour for our U.S. listeners.
Significant increase. And that's during World War II.
That's during World War II, so not that much time has passed.
No kidding. Okay.
And then we see these used in other places in the 70s. They were used in the Middle East in the Yom Kippur War.
Now, these are programmed and then just they kind of run their course and come back. Is that right? Or they crash and, you know, that's planned, right? But we're getting to the point now where I hear a lot of these things are actually operated by somebody, right? I mean, they're in control the entire time and they're recoverable.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes. So the reason, and that's a great point. The reason that we're talking a little bit about the history of the UAVs is just to establish that these are not some sort of magic ace in the hole that the U.S. pulled out of nowhere. You know, I'm not saying that we don't have very smart scientists. I'm saying actually that we have brilliant scientists who spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, what others have tried, what works, what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know that there is a history to this technology. So let's fast forward and let's go into the present stuff now.
Great.
Okay. You were talking about someone actually being around controlling it.
Yeah. Who flies these things?
We fly them. Soldiers fly them. Soldiers actually fly them from a remote, station, like a ground control station. And they interface with it in a way that would remind a lot of non-military people of video games.
Now that's something that I've heard a little bit about recently too, is that the military is very interested in a certain group of youngsters, I guess we'll call them.
Gamers, yeah.
Yeah, the gamers, that's right. And they're the ones who, they're looking at or they're targeting for saying, hey, you know what, you've got the skills, the hand-eye coordination that we need in this exact position. Somebody who's a little bit older than you who may not be that adept at something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you've grown up playing video games, right?
Right.
To this point, if you're a 20 something,
sure.
You probably had, you know, video game controls in your hands your whole life. And here's one that's real life,
mm-hmm.
right? And, big stakes, of course. And it's a lot different, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you still need the same skill set, right?
You do need a lot of the same skills. You need to have, quick reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you want to have hand-eye coordination precise enough to make sure that you can manipulate the controls while you're still looking at the input, you know, of whatever data you have coming in. And one thing that is a little bit different here, you know how when we hear about drones in the news or something, it seems like a drone is this sort of silent lone wolf, you know, and it's cruising through the sky at altitudes unfamiliar to man somehow.
Yeah.
But that's an exaggerated view, because you know how when we talked about tanks, you can't really deploy a tank by itself and expect things to always go well.
Yes.
You can't really expect the same with a drone. The way drones operate in units, okay, and there are four drones, and then there's the ground control center, and then there's a satellite uplink, so they can relay the information from the control center to the drones, and then also use satellite capabilities.
Okay.
To see the ground. Now,
this is like visual reconnaissance type.
Yeah. There's a lot of reconnaissance, because the main reason that these are so effective is that they remove an entire possibility of casualties.
Hmm.
You know, at the very worst, if a drone is shot down or blown up, then there's not an extra dead pilot. There's somebody who is pretty far away.
Yeah.
A lot of times. I don't want to minimize it, but what they do is they can take another drone out and put it back up, put it in the air in a very short time and just send it back in.
Okay. So game over for a short time.
Mm-hmm. And since the 1990s, the Department of Defense has spent billions of dollars, researching these.
Well, one quick thing here.
Yeah, yeah.
How far away are these things from the operator? I mean, what's the maximum distance they can operate at? Because, the way you hear about it, it's so removed, it's so distant.
But, yeah.
But are they closer than we think? Is it relatively nearby?
That's a really good point because, again, sometimes we would see it as the operator sitting in Washington, D.C. in a bunker somewhere in Langley, Virginia, but that's not the case. They do have an impressive radius. It's about 400 nautical miles.
Whoa, that's a long distance. Yeah, I wasn't thinking it was anywhere near that far.
Right. Well, the whole point is to keep these pilots removed from combat.
Yeah.
And also, it probably eliminates some of the potential for human error by having them safely away, operating vicariously.
So one quick thing.
Yeah.
You said pilot. So a drone operator is a pilot? And I won't blame if you don't know the direct answer to this bit, but that was interesting. I just hadn't thought, for some reason, when I think of somebody sitting in a control center mm-hmm. with a joystick and they're controlling the, or whatever controls are.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't think of that as a pilot, but I guess they really are, aren't they?
Well, yeah, because
they're piloting a drone.
They're piloting a drone. That's
yeah.
why.
I mean, they're just not in the aircraft that they're piloting. That's so strange. It's such a strange thing to think about.
It's a weird thing, and it hasn't happened in warfare to this level before.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I didn't mean to stump you on that.
No. You're right, it's really weird.
But, I mean, but I would say you can call them pilots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Now, I know what you probably want to get into here are some of the things that we use.
Yeah. What's the purpose of them? I mean, we talked about reconnaissance.
Yes.
Okay. So there's the kind that just have cameras and just have, data gathering, mm-hmm. Software, whatever installed, cameras and recording devices. What else is out there? What can they do?
Let me tell you, my friend, about the MQ-1 Predator.
What's that?
It's an unmanned drone that started in 1996.
Okay.
And when it first saw some action in 1999. They've been used for surveillance, but they also can carry weapons. They
really?
Carry, yeah, namely, let's see, namely Hellfire missiles, I believe. But they're considered lightly armed. If you have a B-2 bomber or something,
yeah,
it has just tremendous destructive.
Well, I don't know, Ben. A drone carrying a Hellfire missile, that sounds pretty destructive to me.
I know. It's the world's worst paper airplane.
That's crazy. I had no idea they could carry,
that they
missiles
can.
And things like that. I just didn't know it was possible.
The Reaper. No, I've heard the same things you've heard about unmanned aerial vehicles. Mm. I've also seen the footage where the guy kind of throws it off like a fancy radio controlled airplane.
Sure.
You can't do that with this one, man. It's 66 feet wide, wingtip to wingtip.
Whoa.
Yeah. Just for comparison, the Predator is a little bit under 50 feet.
Okay. Wow, that's still big.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's they got to carry missiles.
Oh,
man.
Okay. I always thought of drones as being really small, but mm-hmm.
the
okay.
reconnaissance ones can be smaller.
Okay.
Now it weighs about a little less than 5,000 pounds.
Okay.
The Reaper, that is, and that's if it's not carrying anything. It can carry more stuff. It can carry like over. Let's see. It can carry over 3,500 pounds.
Whoa.
Call it. Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty, that's not terribly bad. I mean, it's 66 feet long. That's huge.
Yeah.
Well, wide, I guess.
Yeah.
Wide
wingtip
to wingtip. But you're talking 8,500 pounds total, something like that?
Oh, and then also 4,000 pounds of fuel.
Oh,
602
wow.
gallons.
Okay.
And, this is still so much lighter than a manned aircraft.
Is it?
Yeah, than a traditional aircraft, because it doesn't have any of the stuff that you have to have to get a person up there flying it.
To keep a human alive up there at
right.
that height, right?
So there's no
yeah.
cockpit. There's none of the life support functions.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
No drink tray? No drink cart thing?
Oh, there is a drink cart.
There is a drink cart? Oh, that's good, because I can't imagine a flight without a drink cart.
So it can be armed. These things are more of what we see the U.S. military doing now is trying to use technology in a smart way. And we see a lot of other militaries doing that too.
Yeah.
So the Reaper has the ability to be sort of adapted depending on its mission. If it's the M is like multi-purpose, multi-use. So if it's just doing reconnaissance for some reason, then it would have a kit that doesn't need to factor in all the possible weaponry. Mm-hmm. But if it's on an offensive mission, then it can be fitted with different weaponry depending on the situation it's going into. It normally carries these bombs called GBU-12s. Before you ask, I'm not sure what it stands for.
Okay. Got it.
But they're huge, man. They're 500 pounds.
Really?
They're 500 pounds.
500 pound bombs. How many of these does it carry?
They're laser guided.
Oh, laser. Oh, cool. Laser guided bombs.
It depends on the mission.
Yeah.
It depends on the mission how many they carry. Now the thing is, set me up for this one, buddy. Ask me what we do with the Reaper in the future.
Okay, Ben. So what do we do with these in the future?
I am so glad you asked. All right. So check it out, Scott. We don't know. We don't know where
well,
this could go.
Thanks for all the info.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Well, it's just because this is it's an old idea, but it's very new in this level of practicality, in this level of practice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could have these things conceivably just in the air for hours because you can just switch off the soldier in the command unit, in the ground control unit, mm-hmm. rather, and you can keep those things in the air till they just literally run out of fuel.
Autopilot. So these things are running on fuel. They've got batteries, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're hybrid vehicles.
So they could just kind of just hover around until needed, and then use them for whatever purpose mm-hmm. we had intended them for. Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting. How long? I mean, do you happen to have any idea how long they stay in the air, or how long they can stay in the air, or anything like that? Is that doesn't they'll even tell us?
That is something that I'm not too sure
about.
See,
that's the thing. A lot of the stuff, you know, we'd like to give you a lot more information about certain things and some things you just can't find an answer to because they're being real tight-lipped about it.
Right.
Military issues are always like this. Remember the tanks? We could say only so much about them and then, you know, there's a point where it says, well, that information is not available.
Yes.
And I think that's the case with a lot of this drone stuff is that, you know, you want more. Maybe it's just not something you can dig up right at this time. Maybe mm-hmm. in 10 years you'd be able to find out what's going on right now,
mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't know what's happening in present day.
Well, ideally we being the U.S. military, would want drones 24 hours a day, if mm-hmm. possible. And it is possible as long as they land and refuel. Drones usually, at least the Reaper, the big one.
Yeah.
Now, this is our T-Rex.
Sure.
I guess. Or whatever this is the whale.
The ultimate predator.
This is the ultimate predator.
Got it. Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And, they're operated. They actually have two people operating them.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you have if you're a sniper, you are a sniper and you have a spotter. Well, if you're a pilot for a Reaper, there's this other, another person will be monitoring the sensor systems.
Hmm.
And that's their job entirely because that's a lot for one person. You got one person concentrating on the plane.
Yeah.
You've got another person concentrating on the information. I mean,
that's pretty typical in a fighter situation anyways, right?
Yes.
You have two people. One's monitoring, everything else, weather condition, altitude, all that stuff. The other one's, you know, flying the mission, trying to hit the target. So that's not unusual, but,
right.
I don't know. I didn't expect that in the drone for some reason. I thought that a lot of that stuff would be automated versus actually having a human sit there and monitor that stuff. But I guess you can never take that out of it, right?
Right. If you take the human part of this completely out, then eventually, you know what? This is an excellent time to talk about this. We'd be sort of remiss if we didn't bring up the fact that drones are very, very controversial in several ways. The primary way in which they're controversial is this threat of automation. What would happen, for instance, if in the future there is a large war that is fought by largely automated things than we could possibly have if technology goes to some crazy degree. We could possibly have a war fought entirely through proxy machines by people who do not leave their area.
A casualty-free war.
That's the problem.
On one side.
Right. Unless both sides are armed with this kind of technology, because another criticism that the U.S. military has received for use of drones has been deaths of civilians.
Oh, okay.
And the question then becomes, are these people who are operating this vicariously? Now, you'll recall a few, we're getting old now, so a few years back, there were some very loud and valid criticisms of video games.
Yeah.
And how they desensitized mm-hmm. children, allegedly.
Sure.
So if that problem is real, then people would make a similar argument about people piloting drones.
Huh.
Now, I'm not advocating that. I personally play video games, and I don't think I'm a desensitized sociopath, you know. I have yet to strangle a cat.
Well, word around the office, but I'm not going to say anymore.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe yeah, today maybe. Will be the day I break. but so there are criticisms, and the response to these criticisms by the U.S. military and by any military that would be using these kind of devices is that we're trying to save the lives of people in our military, and we're trying to, you know, of course we're not going out there to kill civilians.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point of this sort of operation.
Understood. This is a protect your own situation.
Right.
I get it.
Right. And again, it is chiefly reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm.
But we wouldn't be giving you a good episode if we didn't at least touch on something that maybe some people don't know so much about drones, which is that they are tremendously controversial.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of think of another very controversial thing in war would be a landmine, for instance.
Yeah.
And then the question really comes down to the ability to protect American soldiers, the ability to protect the soldiers of whichever military uses these, because it's not always going to be something that the U.S. possesses. This sort of technology is so much bang for your buck, and it's so, it's in its infancy now,
mm-hmm.
but it will easily become the future of aerial warfare.
I could also see, people saying that, you know, you're so far removed from the battlefield, that you're in an air conditioned trailer or wherever you are, a command center. And it just totally takes you out of the situation of, you know, what's really happening there. You're not I'm not laughing, but I'm just saying that it's like you're really playing a video game. You're playing on a screen, and you're not really understanding the situation that's happening there on the ground, or you're not seeing the results of it really, because you come in, you fly your mission, you're gone. And you don't really see the raw effects of that, I guess. So a lot of people might say that, you know, it too far removes the person from the emotional side of what's really happening
mm-hmm.
in the war. But is that really a bad thing? I guess not. I mean, if that's the mission anyway, if that mission was going to be, you know,
It's
going to happen no matter what.
Sure.
Maybe it's not so bad to spare somebody that emotional trauma as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
that, it's a bit removed in that situation.
Well,
does that make any sense? I think
that
it did,
does.
Because
that does.
It takes you out of the game, really, in a way.
Right, and because really, I think I wouldn't call it a game specifically, but that's a good point, because if you are based in the ground, and now these guys can be based in, you know, Baghdad or something,
mm-hmm.
and flying out, and in that case, when they have completed a mission, They can't leave. They're still on tour.
True.
So they have to stay back. But they could also be in Nevada, for instance, using a satellite relay.
I see.
And I think that there really is a debate about this, but we can't avoid the fact that now that drones exist, they are inevitably going to become more and more mainstream parts of military stuff, just because they're able to do things that people, human soldiers, cannot do safely. Like the thing you hear about the most when you hear these criticisms, right? You hear three things. You hear that they desensitize operators, right? Mm-hmm. And then maybe even the American public. You hear that they are they may, as a result of that, result in civilian deaths. The argument can be made the other way, that they actually prevent civilian deaths because they're able to, again, free themselves of some of the human error that would occur. And then the third one, and the one that's the most, you know, conspiracy theory, right, is the idea of assassinations. So specifically looking for, like we earlier talked about, high-value targets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the CIA in 2002 had used a had a couple of times found Al-Qaeda terrorists and even down to specific individuals, and they've been able to assassinate them using using a predator, actually.
Wow.
Now these things are very rare. Again, you can't think of it like a movie scene assassination, you know, but the thing is they have this tremendous ability to do what's called, I guess, force projection. So they can move faster than most manned flight systems, because you seriously don't have to wait for pilot. You don't have to wait for them to sleep. You can just switch the teams out.
Mm-hmm.
And like it or not, I think drones are here to stay, and we're probably going to see more and more unmanned vehicles, maybe even unmanned ground vehicles. Like,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, like robotic tanks.
Interesting.
And we don't know really where this will go. And
all right.
Hopefully it'll result in a world where war is not necessary.
Very good, Ben.
I was trying to end it on that note.
Yeah, that's good, because we kind of took it down there at the end. But
yeah,
you know what? You told me a lot more about drones than I knew. Because I do you have any more? I didn't want to cut you off there, but that's I just had no idea at all. I knew the controversy, and mm-hmm. like I said, I thought drones were small. I thought drones were, you know, strictly reconnaissance. I didn't know they were carrying missiles. And
I would say chiefly reconnaissance is
okay.
Fair.
All right, but, very good. Yeah.
But no, man, you're not off base.
You've opened my eyes here to this, because really they're kind of cool. I want to take a look at some of these, the Predator and the what was the other one, the
Reaper.
The Reaper.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big one. But then don't forget the other smaller ones, and you can see the evolution. You can actually find some photographs and some stuff on the web about the unmanned aerial vehicles.
Oh, sure.
History.
You even gave me a cutaway here with some of the components and the mm-hmm. All the sensors and the satellite upfeed information and mm-hmm. the fuel cell assemblies.
Isn't it crazy that they're hybrids? They have batteries.
That is crazy. Yeah.
And they have engines.
Hybrid vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hybrid vehicles high above.
Hybrid vehicles high above.
Something like that. Yeah.
Hey, man, I got to tell you, before we get out of here, I saw the funniest thing, because I was looking for some ammunition about flying cars to make a reference to in this episode.
Yeah.
And I saw this thing. It was like, it said, I'm so tired of people talking about 2010 and saying, hey, it's 2010. Where are the flying cars? It's like, we already have them. They're called planes.
Yeah. Good point. They're, man, Ben, you know how to push my buttons on that, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I thought you would like that, because it turns out I was being.
Yeah,
nerdy about it.
I know it, but just hearing the words,
those
two words get me.
Okay, so if you guys want to find us, please don't type too much stuff about flying cars.
Nothing about flying cars.
On our Facebook, which is Car Stuff, on our...
Just Cars, not Flying Cars.
Just, okay. Yeah, on our, maybe that's the name of our show, Just Cars.
maybe.
But you can also find us on Twitter at CarStuffHSW.
That's where we like to talk about cars and not flying cars.
Okay, I think I see where you're going. Mm-hmm. You're definitely not going to find too much positive information about flying cars on Scott's blog, which is nevertheless awesome. You will find information about flying cars on our website and our auto channel. You'll also find information about anything from drones to, let's see, what else do we have on there?
Asparagus.
We have asparagus. It's not in the auto section.
Oh, in the auto section. You had to be clear.
You know, yeah, but you can find asparagus, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there, too. But, yeah, I mean, hot rods, choppers, unusual cars.
Yeah.
Hybrid cars.
Yeah. How to take care of your car.
Oh, yeah. We got all kinds of things. I mean, really, search anything, and it's likely to come up with something.
And in the unlikely event that you do not find what you're looking for, or you have a suggestion for us for an upcoming episode, go ahead and drop us a line electronically at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. The howstuffworks.com iPhone app is coming soon. Get access to our content in a new way. Articles, videos, and more, all on the go. Check out the latest podcasts and blog posts, and see what we're saying on Facebook and Twitter. Coming soon to iTunes.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.